Zion Williamson getting hurt last night in that Duke North Carolina game. I mean, Duke basketball right now, those freshmen, somebody compared them to almost like the Beatles. I mean, you sent me a story, I think it was in the New York Post, about how much some guy spent so he could sit.
$10,000.
Right. I mean, there is a...
he wanted to see Zion play.
There is... I mean, Barack Obama was there last night, sitting in the front row. The tickets were going for Super Bowl-type prices. It's the Zion Williamson effect. When they're on the road, secondary ticket sellers, the market goes berserk because everybody wants to see. And it's not just Zion, but it's mostly Zion, right? He kind of anchors it. And so last night, when 36 seconds into that game, Zion Williamson hurts his right knee when his left shoe explodes on him. ESPN treated the story like it was, I jokingly called it the biggest story in the world earlier. There was a time there on, I know you were at the ASU game, there was a time there on ESPN last night where you felt like it was the biggest story in the world. And
I was at the ASU game. I was sitting next to a kid I didn't even know, and he's showing me, like, Zion Williams, he just busted out of his shoe. Williamson busted out of his shoe. Look at this. And I'm like, so I'm watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't really care about the shoe. He looks like he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this guy hurt? Like, but everybody was like, so like, wow, man, he busted out of his shoe. I'm thinking, God, is he okay? Seems like he's okay. I mean, just that he was trying to. I had an NBA scout that was at the game last night that I spoke to today. Said, yeah, I was in the hallway. He was trying to get back in. Like, he was trying to get.
Yeah,
he was running up and down.
Sideline
and showing
reporter
them,
said he was running up and down in the hallway.
He was trying to get back into that game. He wanted to go back and play.
But man, I mean, last night, the coverage after the game, the coverage this morning on ESPN, and you can understand why Zion Williamson is an extremely popular player. I mean, he did the highlight dunks and the YouTube videos and the, I mean, all of it. He is one of the most anticipated arrivals in the NBA that we've seen in a while. So the idea that he could have hurt his knee and missed significant time caused the stir this morning of all these hot takes and people saying he should play, he should not. Jay Williams said that Zion should sit out the rest of the year.
Zion Williamson can do whatever he wants. He is his own man. But I can tell you one thing. For a family like their family, you know, you have a chance to make a lot of money. That's a major, major decision. And you have to be able to compartmentalize your love for the game as opposed to the long end of the game business-wise. Is it in Zion Williams' best interest with what he's been able to accomplish thus far in this season to come back and to try to play off a knee injury? I don't think it is. If I were his advisor, if I were an agent, I would advise him not to. I think that would be the right business move.
Jay Billis took a more rational and measured response to it.
I think if he can come back and play without concern for further injury, he plays. I don't see how this is different than twisting an ankle or jamming a finger or anything like that. I know there's a big pot of gold at the end of this for Zion Williamson, but I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It's amazing how many different people had an opinion about Zion Williamson this morning, whether he should play, whether he should not. We'll get into the Nike business in a minute here, what it means for them.
Let's start with whether he should play or not. This is asinine. It's stupid. It's absurd. If the kid's healthy, he should play. And if he's not healthy, he shouldn't play. This is a medical thing. What kind of world are we getting to? I mean, why play college? Well, I'm going to play for half a season, and I'm going to stop because I don't want to. This is ridiculous. Okay, it's getting to the point of absurdity. I'm serious. Football is a very dangerous sport. I understand guys bowing out of a bowl game, like you mentioned earlier in the show. Guy wants to bow out of a meaningless bowl game and take a little bit of risk off of not getting injured. I'm all for it. By all means, the games are meaningless. Zion Williamson's got a chance to go to the Final Four. Chance to win a national championship. Chance to do what kids dream of. To be that guy holding up the trophy in one shining moment. You know, he's going to take that away from him because of a little risk factor. And I'm going to tell you again, if he tore his ACL last night, he's still the top pick in the draft.
I don't doubt it.
He's still the number one pick in the draft. We are bordering absurd. I'm almost ashamed that we're getting to this point where people have to bring this up. Here's a kid having a great year, and you want to cut it short before they even get to the NCAA. What does that mean? What does that say for his teammates? His teammates are all trying to win a national championship. His coach who's recruiting him is trying to win a national championship. You've got a chance to win a championship. What is that? What kind of teammate of you are you?
Don't you think part of the outrage is sort of directed not so much at, it's directed towards the NCAA, not towards Duke or Zion Williamson or anything like that. Because here's an organization that, in the minds of some, take advantage of these amateur athletes. So you can see like a professional athlete, like a Jay Williams, a former professional athlete, saying, hey, man, you're not getting paid by the NCAA. You don't owe them nothing. If you get hurt, you're the number one pick, sit out. Don't play. So why play at all? I think part of the basis, and I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm trying to look at it from their perspective. I think part of the basis of you should sit, you should not play because you got hurt is based in part that some people believe that these players are getting screwed by not getting compensated for the work they do on the floor from a financial standpoint. They're not getting paid to play. I mean, we just got done talking a second ago. How much money is Zion Williamson making Duke? How much money is Zion Williamson making those secondary ticket brokers who are selling those tickets for 10 times what their face value is, right? So somebody advocating that Zion Williamson not play is probably doing it in part because they're saying, hey, man, you're getting screwed in this deal. If you're hurt, don't play. Protect yourself.
If you are hurt, don't play. I agree with that. I think we all agree. If you're hurt, don't play. If you've got a tear in your knee or if there's something wrong with your knee, it's not structurally, don't play.
Yeah.
By all means, don't play. But if you get checked out medically by their people and your people, I would have my people check them out too.
Sure.
I'm going to go to the Duke doctors and they say you're cleared. Okay, now I want a second opinion. I want to make sure. How's my knee? I checked it out too. Your knee's good. Well, then by all means, play.
Don't play.
Now, I'll take it a step further. The season ends and you're a great player and you're going to be a top five pick and you don't make the NCAA tournament and you make the NIT. You want to bow out then?
Bow out.
Okay. I could live with that.
Sure.
I could live with it. It's the freaking NIT.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything. But if you make the NCAA tournament, kids dream about playing in the NCAA tournament. You don't not play for the slim chance that you may get hurt. And again, basketball's not football. You don't get injuries as much in basketball.
For the record, I completely agree with you. For the record, comparing this to a kid not playing in a bowl game, I think is ludicrous. And by the way, the doctors did come out today. Grade one sprain, grade one right knee sprain. He's day to day. He's going to be fine. It's not that big of a deal. And I'm with you. If the doctors say you're healthy, play, especially if you're going for a national championship. The Nike thing, this angle to the story, I love it because it's there's a secondary kind of branch of fallout to what happened last night with Zion Williamson, and that's from the shoe companies. There was a little mini war that broke out last night. Puma, their official account, tweeted out, well, that wouldn't have happened if you were wearing Pumas.
Man.
Okay, now they quickly...
I know you love this part of it.
They quickly deleted it when they found out that he was hurt, but even Terry Rozier tweeted out, hey, come to Puma. Sonny Vaccaro, longtime shoe executive. If you're a sports fan, you probably recognize the name.
Of course.
Sonny Vaccaro called Zion Williamson, quote, the most valuable player to come out of high school or college since LeBron James, without question, and also said that when it comes to the highlight of the shoe breaking, because that's terrible news for Nike. They're going to show that highlight until we die.
Yeah, how could the kid pick Nike? Why do you want to be a Nike?
It was his exact quote. They're going to show that highlight until we die. And now, yeah, to your point, when Nike goes bidding for that shoe contract to Zion Williamson, which could be the most lucrative ever in the history of shoe contracts, Zion Williamson might get the biggest ever.
How do you believe him that he's selling a shoe that broke on him?
Exactly.
How do you believe the kid's selling a great... If I wear this shoe. Yeah, that broke on you, dude.
Yep.
And I told you flat out, like, I like wearing Nikes as casual. Like, if we're wearing shorts and I'm going out, I like Nikes because of the look. I don't wear them to do any of my running or any of my workouts. I don't wear them. I wear other shoes. Different brands.
There goes that Nike sponsorship of the Burns and Gambo show. Thanks a lot.
No, listen.
Might just open the window and watch the money fly out. It's flying out right now the window.
I say that I do wear Nikes. I have like three pairs of Nikes that I wear, but I wear them casually.
Just teasing.
I like the way they look. Would I use them for box jumps and lateral movement and the stuff that I do in my workouts? No.
Yeah. Suns game is underway. As Gambo had reported, Kelly Oubre is indeed in the starting lineup, but Josh Jackson is not the one on the bench. Mikal Bridges is the one on the bench. Josh Jackson was in the starting lineup tonight. So Josh Jackson was not the one who got benched for Kelly Oubre. Mikal Bridges was the one who got benched for Kelly Oubre tonight. So take that for what that is worth. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the business of baseball is changing. There's been a lot of talk of that lately. And one Diamondback player not only understands that, he thinks the rest of the league kind of needs to get on board as well. That's coming up right here on the Burns and Gambo show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
The knowledge that was dropped on us today was dropped on us by John Gambadoro, who reported that Kelly Oubre would be in the starting lineup for the Phoenix Suns tonight. And indeed he is. And so far, early start.
It's bad news for the Cavs.
Yeah, they're down 8-2. The Suns are up 8-2 with about 8.5 minutes to go in the first quarter. So, yeah, so far, bad news.
Bad news for the Cavs.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Let's get that win. Let's talk about a win tomorrow.
Hey.
Let's talk about a Suns victory.
If we don't, bring me your blood pressure pills.
I'll bring you some extra.
Without a prescription, I'm going to start popping those bad boys tomorrow if we're talking about a 16-game losing streak capped off by a loss to the 12-win
Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup. I mean, come on, this is a lock now. It's a lock with Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup.
I hear something else you know what? And if they do win, that's going to be part of the angle tomorrow, too. Shame on them for not trying that a little sooner.
I know, especially if he plays well.
Because that's something we've been talking about for a long time.
That like he should why start.
They, yes, you know,
that
he plays
with
start.
He plays with so much energy. He's probably, out of all the wings, he's probably got the best combination of offense and defense. I mean, he could defend really well. He plays with a passion, and he could score. He could shoot threes. He's a 3-and-D guy. So out of all the wings, he's the guy that I like the most.
Yeah.
Because I think he's the most versatile out of all the wing players.
Turning our attention to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Kind of hard to turn our attention to the Diamondbacks with this terrible weather and the Cactus League set to start this weekend. Steven Souza was on Bickley and Murata today. Now, we had the pleasure of talking to Steven at FanFest. He's a really good interview. He's a
great interview all the time.
Intense guy, honest answers, things like that. And, you know, we talked about this earlier, and I think we need to kind of circle back to this. Everybody's kind of focused right now on what's going on in baseball, these free agents not getting these contracts, the players tweeting about the players not getting the contracts, and this kind of this bad tone that's kind of hanging over the game right now. Steven Souza looked at both sides of the issue today when he was on Bickley and Murata, and I thought gave us something to talk about here. Number one, he agrees that teams are definitely changing the way they look at player contracts, and players have to be ready for that.
We've had some bad contracts that were 10 years that didn't end up well, you know, at the back end of it. And it's because, you know, back in the day, people used to get paid for what they did, not what they're going to do. And that's shifting in the front office. They're trying to pay it now for what you're going to do, not what you did. And so there has to be a change for that.
All right. Agreed.
100%.
Totally agreed.
I mean, I agree with that, yeah.
And yet, the sport is flush with cash right now. I think the overall total revenues for the sports are approaching $10 billion for baseball. It's somewhere in the nines, I believe. And he said the problem is that some of these teams are fielding basically AAA teams and charging fans a king's ransom to go to them.
The real problem is that we don't have all 30 teams trying to win the World Series.
Yeah.
And if every team got in a room and looked at their fans in the eye and said, we're competing with the team that we have, that's ridiculous. I mean, we can look at some rosters, and what these fans are paying to come to the game to see AAA teams, it's not okay. It's just not okay. It's not okay for the competitiveness of baseball. It's not okay for the future of baseball. And it's definitely not okay for the fans that bring their families, that grind all week long to just pay those tickets to come to the game to see a poor baseball game. It's not fun.
And I was kind of surprised to hear you say you disagreed with that.
Yeah, because, you know, listen, this is a player trying to tell an owner how to run his business. You don't have the owners come down and, you know, like tell the players how to bunt and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, some of them do.
Oh, they don't. I mean, it's just, it's
some owners are a little more meddling, you know, than others.
I've never seen an owner come down and grab the bat and say, like, hey, listen, you're doing this wrong. I'm going to show you how to lay down a perfect bunt. Or, look, you're not fielding this right. I've never seen that. I haven't. These are all different businesses. And not every business is the same. They're not all equal. All the owners don't have the same amount of money. They're all not. It's not an equal playing field. So it's unfair to judge these teams equally. Teams have business models. And the Yankees' business model is different than the Twins' business model. And the Dodgers' business model is different than the Diamondbacks' business model. And the Red Sox' business model is different than the Marlins' business model. Some teams just make a hell of a lot more money. And they can spend a hell of a lot more money. And there are other teams that spend, but this is our budget. We don't, you know, we have a budget. Now, like for the Diamondbacks, the reality is that they try to run at a net zero capacity. They try to not make any money and not lose any money. You know, they're certainly not like, okay, we're gonna make $40 million this year. No, they don't. Their owners and their partners don't take any money. They don't take a salary.
And I'm not accusing the Diamondbacks of doing that. But I'll tell you then where I disagree with you is I think it's naive to think that there are some franchises out there in Major League Baseball that aren't gaming the system, that aren't deliberately, feel to Steven's point, that if they were going to call their fans in a room and say, we're doing everything we can to win a World Series. No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. And are there teams out there that are in all likelihood gaming the system so they can collect as much revenue sharing money as they possibly can without actually trying to field a winning team? I believe that.
Everybody can win, and there are teams that know that you know, the Diamondbacks decided not to spend on A.J. Pollock, Patrick Corbin, and Paul Goldschmidt.
I'm not
because
talking
not,
about the Diamondbacks.
I know,
I'm
but that's a good example. You're talking about the Marlins.
I'm talking about teams like the Marlins who I think there's a system that you could take advantage of by not trying all that hard and yet collect everybody else's money. That I have a problem with. For a sport that's doing historically better now financially than they have in forever. That's the word I keep using. It's naive to think that every team is above board, doing everything they can, working closely to their business model to make sure that they're doing everything right. I think there are some teams out there that are taking advantage of the system. Yes, and I don't think the Diamondbacks are one of them. I'm not saying the Diamondbacks.
That is a team that gave Giancarlo Stanton $325 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Miami Marlins. And then when they didn't win with him after a couple of years, they bailed. They got out. They got out from under it as best they could. And they said, we're going to start over. And they traded a lot of their players for prospects, and they're going to try to rebuild that way. I don't think the Miami Marlins game plan is, we want to suck every year for the rest of our lives. But I do think their plan is, our building's empty. This is a tough place to sell baseball to. Fans don't come out. We can't afford to pay these exorbitant salaries because it's not working. Like, Giancarlo Stanton didn't add an extra 15,000 people to every Marlins game. He didn't.
Then they shouldn't have made that decision in the first
probably
place.
And that's why when the new ownership came in, they decided to cut bait.
Yeah, I we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. I think that you're painting this picture of all owners running these things kind of perfectly, and I just think there are some who take advantage of it.
I'm sure that there are. I'm sure that you're right, but not all. I mean, it's just there are some teams that just don't have. They can't play at those tables that the other teams can play.
Well, the Diamondbacks can't play at those tables that the other teams can.
Okay, look at the Twins. Okay, it's a great organization. They just signed two of their best young players to really good deals, right? Good deals for them.
Mm-hmm.
Players get some security. They're trying to win, but they can't sign Harper or Machado.
No, and I'm not. And I'm not.
And I know.
I'm not saying they're bad. It's a bad organization because they're not. But what was the number I saw? I'd have to call it off the top of my head or look through my notes to find it. But there is a big percentage of teams that are way, way, way under this luxury tax threshold. I mean, like, way under the number, to the point where it's hard to look at what they're spending on their payroll and say they're trying. They're trying hard, and in a time where players are looking at the way these monies are getting distributed and wondering whether it's fair or not, I think it's fair to wonder whether every team is doing everything.
Well, the luxury
can.
Tax threshold was set up to make the biggest teams not spend a crazy money. So the predetermined threshold is $197 million. So, yeah, there are a lot of teams that are $40, $50, $60, $70 million under that. You know why? Because they don't make $197 million in a year.
Yeah, but there, I mean, there are some teams, too, that are even further than that. Okay. I mean, you have to go way down.
If you're talking about teams that are $70, $80 million, sure, I understand. You can make a really good argument. But the fact that there's a lot of teams not even close to the threshold is set up so the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Dodgers don't just absolutely kill everybody. So they pay a penalty, a big penalty, if they want to, you know, go field a team that's going to cost $250 million, they're going to really pay for it. But the teams that are, like the Diamondbacks will be, what, $60, $65 million under that threshold?
They're like $115, $120, I think. Here's the number I was looking for. A quarter of baseball is $100 million under that threshold. A quarter, eight teams. Eight teams are spending on their payroll $100 million under that threshold. So basically half of what they're allowed to spend on their rosters. I think you can make a good argument that eight of those teams aren't trying all that hard to win baseball games. And it would be hard-pressed to justify to their fans that they are trying to win baseball games. That's a quarter of baseball. Quarter of the teams out there.
There are probably some teams that you are right. But there are other teams who are probably spending $95 million on their payroll, and that's what they make.
And that's what they make. And you're probably right on that, too. I like Steven Souza's balanced way of looking at it, rather than one side. Here's the one side, here's the other. I think it's a good, fair, balanced way of looking at it. The Cardinals are looking for some talent and some depth at the wide receiver position, and they did not pursue a guy with ties right here in the Valley. Why? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show. Okay, seriously, can you show me video of your goats?
Goats are stuck.
We're on now.
It's so funny. They can't. My neighbor sent me a picture of my goats. They're like, there's so much snow in Flagstaff. Like, they can't get out to the yard. They got the barn,
yeah,
but they can't get out to the yard.
What's funnier is that the music was playing and it was time for us to talk, and you were still showing video of the goats. I'm like, Gambo, it's time to talk now.
They're like trying to get out. They're like, we're trying to run in the yard, and they can't. They keep getting stuck in the snow. They keep going back to the pen.
I just saw on Twitter from ABC 15, it's a record for snow in one day. Flagstaff Airport got 33 inches.
Oh, my God. That's almost 3 feet. That's almost 3 feet of snow in one day. Gambo, of course, has a cabin up there in Flagstaff, and he's got goats. For some reason, he's got goats. I, being Gambo's partner on the air, have tried to convince him he doesn't need goats anymore. Gambo's wife has tried to convince him he doesn't need the goats anymore. Apparently, the only one in this world.
I like the goats.
Oh, you're the only one.
I like my goats.
Yep,
I have four of them, and I like them.
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Chelsea, I stand with you. Get rid of the goats. There's no reason to have goats up there.
I just tweeted out the picture or the video of my goats
You'll be trending in no time, I'm sure.
My goat's in the snow. So Gambo987 on Twitter, if you don't follow me, it should load in a couple seconds. It's finalizing now. My goat's trying to actually go out in the snow, and they can't get out there.
There you go. Gambo will be trending before you know it. The Arizona Cardinals, we talked about this earlier with free agency. The Cards, they're going to get attached to just about every free agent offensive lineman who is available on March 13th, right? Because the need is so great for them to upgrade that offensive line. The same can probably be said of the wide receiver position as well. And that's in part why it was interesting. And not like, oh my God, I can't believe the Cardinals didn't do this. But Jalen Strong is a wide receiver with local ties. And for a team that had a desperate, desperate need for bodies at that position, it was interesting to see that Jalen Strong agreed to a deal today with the Cleveland Browns. And it doesn't sound like the Cardinals gave much consideration to Jalen Strong at all.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero consideration. Didn't play last year. He's had a really hard time just, you know, picking up the NFL. So he had a really hard time trying to learn playbooks and get it. He was such a great player in college, and I really thought he was going to be good in the NFL, and he hasn't been. But you see him sign with the Browns. A good. I hope he gets his career on track, and I hope he makes the roster, and I hope he can play for a few years. I mean, I want the kid to do well. But the Cardinals, no. I mean, as badly as they need wide receivers, they had absolutely no interest in giving Jalen Strong an opportunity here. Like, they want better than that. They don't want a guy who's, you know, coming off an injury 2 years ago and didn't play last year. And, you know, they're beyond that. They need players that could play. I mean, if they had signed Jalen Strong, I mean, let's look at it from that angle. If the Cardinals were the team today that signed Jalen Strong instead of the Browns, I mean, we know him, but would we be, like, excited about it?
No.
No. We'd be like, you got to do better than that.
Well, no. Here's exactly what I would think if the Cardinals had announced they signed Jalen Strong today. I would have thought, okay, a lottery ticket. That's exactly what I would have thought. I would have thought a lottery ticket. Whereas every other guy they've signed so far this offseason, whether it's Alford or Brooks Reed or Charles Clay, I look at them and go, potential upgrade. Not a guaranteed upgrade, but a potential upgrade. I think Alford's definitely an upgrade.
Yes, major.
I think Clay is probably an upgrade over what they had. And Brooks Reed, if Marcus Golden leaves them in free agency, then Brooks Reed is probably their plan B if they don't draft a pass rusher in the first round. If they had signed Jalen Strong, I wouldn't have looked at him as an upgrade. I would have looked at him as a lottery ticket. A scratch off, see what you want. Maybe you found a guy who's going to help. Maybe you found a guy who's going to get cut the last weekend of August. That's the most I would have thought. It's too bad, because I do remember that draft night when Jalen Strong went in the third round. I
70th overall, I believe it was.
Believe he kept slipping in that draft. It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think we predicted for like 27 straight picks that Jalen Strong was going here.
Yeah.
We did. He's got to go here.
He's going to go here. Yeah.
He's going to go here then.
Here's a team that needs a wide receiver.
He's
going to
go, right. Yeah. I mean, and he fell. I mean, he fell into the third round and just never got his career going on track. I mean, really, again, had a hard time, I think, picking up the offenses and learning the playbook and, you know, being able to go out there and play. And it's a shame because he was such a great player at ASU. 1,000-yard seasons and dominant. And, of course, the great play against USC the Jail Mary. But his career hasn't gone on track. If the Cardinals were the team that signed him, I think I'd be like, yeah, you got to do better than that. Get somebody that could play. Not somebody that's been out of football for a year.
Yeah. Marcus Golden, and we will probably have the sound for this tomorrow. I just saw this on social media a second ago. Since we're talking about Cardinals and free agents, I'm going to spring this on you. He made an appearance on Sirius XM Radio's Moving the Change show, and he was asked during that appearance if he saw returning to the Cardinals as a possibility. Golden said, quote, yes. My agent's been talking to them on and off during the season, so I never cut out the possibility of returning. We'll see how it works out, man. No matter what happens, I'll be ready and I'll be prepared because I'm going to keep on working and I'm going to keep on putting the work in. Close quote.
My understanding on Marcus Golden is, what will the market pay him? If the market pays him more than they feel he's worth, they will let him go. If the market isn't there for him, then they will try to keep him. They don't know what the market is for him. They don't know. What is somebody else willing to pay Marcus Golden? If you want to pay him based on last year, he's not going to get much money. If you want to look back 2 years ago, and, you know, he's almost in the Charles Clay category in a way, isn't he? Hey, 2 years ago, he had a good year. Last year, you didn't have a good year. So,
I mean, to a certain extent,
that's the thing. Like, if you want to base him off of the season we had double-digit sacks, somebody might say, okay, he's still young, still talented. I might be able to, you know, like the Raiders would be good to take a chance on a guy like that. Because if he pops, if he's back, you know, you might have a guy that gets 10, 12, 14 sacks. He's a good player. But if he's not, and you know, how much do you want to pay for a guy that you know didn't get to the quarterback last year? You know, he was coming off the injury and right. He just wasn't able to, you know, be successful.
I hope he's back. And again, to your point, costs being a big factor in that, right? Cost prohibitive. But I hope he's back because I think he's got the kind of motor and the kind of drive and the kind of design. I've always liked Marcus Golden. I've always liked
him.
Me
too.
I think he's a high-energy guy. And I think, as we've seen in the NFL, sometimes you're coming back from a torn ACL. Just because you're back doesn't mean you're back. You know, and I think Marcus Golden was kind of proof of that. That it took him a while to kind of find, and he's still kind of looking for his groove. I hope the market is kind of cold on him. I do, because then that would allow the Cardinals the opportunity to bring him back at a discounted rate, at a cost prohibitive rate. I like that idea, because I think in any other circumstance, if Marcus Golden were playing for somebody else, we would look at Marcus Golden as, hey, you know what? That's not a bad risk. on a low contract, on a low dollar contract, that's not a bad guy to take a chance on next year.
I think he's a great guy to take a chance on.
And so
I think he's a great guy for somebody to take a chance on.
I kind of hope the market allows the Cardinals to take a chance on one of their own guys by bringing him back. If he gets a lot of money, then you got to let him go. You can't give him a lot of money if you're the Cardinals.
I mean, it might be a one-year prove-it deal, too. Well, he might be.
Fine. Then I'd be fine with the Cardinals signing him to a one-year prove-it deal as long as it doesn't break the
bank. Give him incentives based on sacks?
I would almost call him a Kyme Time special. In some way, if you were on somebody else's team, if you were to sign him on a one-year prove-it deal, wouldn't that almost be a classic Steve Kyme type deal?
Yeah.
If Marcus Golden played for somebody else and you were able to get him on a one-year prove-it deal, that would almost be the kind of move that Steve Kyme would make.
Yeah, he tweeted out today, "I'm used to laying it on the line for everything I got. I'm used to laying it on the line for everything I got. Let's get it." You know, so it's like, I think in some ways maybe he's feeling like, okay, I might have to go out there and do a one-year prover type deal to show somebody. Like a Tyrann Mathieu.
Exactly.
Right? Like what Tyrann did.
He had to reestablish value, just not for as much money as he got for the Texans. But yeah, that's a great comp. We want you to subscribe, if you haven't already, to the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. Phoenix Suns are in the process of trying to lose their end, I should say, their 15-game losing streak, and they're attempting to do it with a new-look lineup. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. What an odd Phoenix Suns game so far. 5:57 to go in the second quarter. The Suns are beating the Cavs 39-38.
Damn right they are.
Odd for a couple of things. Number one,
that the Suns are winning?
Well, there's that. Odd in that for a moment, and Jordan actually popped into our headphones about a half hour ago and said, "Look at that. There it is. It's the Dragan Bender versus Marquise Chris matchup we've all been wanting to see." At one point, Dragan Bender for the Suns and Marquise Chris for the Cavs not only on the floor at the same time, they were playing against each other, right? So there was that. It was odd to see Dragan Bender in the game so early. You reported earlier that Oubre was going to start.
Yes.
And he did.
He did start.
We thought at the time it was going to be for Josh Jackson.
I never was told who he was taking the place of. We just knew Oubre was starting. We reported it that Oubre was starting. He ended up starting for Mikal Bridges. We just reported that Oubre was starting. I just didn't know who he was taking the place of. It ended up being Mikal Bridges that he ended up starting
and
for.
That's the odd part is that think about this for a minute. Dragan Bender got in a game before Mikal Bridges. We were watching this game in studio, and there was a time during one of the commercial breaks where I said, "Is he hurt? Is Mikal Bridges hurt? How is it that Dragan?" Now he's in. Now he's played. He had a three pointer. He's got the 3 points on the game. He's played about 8 minutes of game action. He's been in there for a big chunk of the second quarter. I mean, it looks like he's actually warming up a little bit. But to think that there was a game where Dragan Bender got in before Mikal Bridges, that does not compute at all. I want to know the story behind that.
I don't know.
I want to know what's going down with that, because that's weird. Twitter for a while was trying to figure out if he was hurt. Twitter for a while was trying to figure out, did he do something wrong? Had he been, was he being disciplined? Was, you know, what went, how does a guy get hurt during the All-Star break? Then he showed up. Now he's playing. Now he's in there. But to think that he was basically the Dave King, our friend over at Bright Side of the Sun, said, "I never thought I'd see a world in which Mikal Bridges was the ninth man in." He was the ninth man in. Mikal Bridges.
I don't know.
Who's been arguably one of their better players all year.
It's not like TJ Warren's back.
Right.
It's not like you've got all four wings. I mean, unless they just felt that they wanted to go with some size with Bender, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I mean, maybe they're trying to shorten the rotation a little bit. I'll find out after the game, but maybe they're trying to shorten the rotation a little bit. But Bridges, he got in late in the first half. He's still in the game now in the second quarter. So he's getting his minutes.
He's getting his minutes now, but it was odd to see him. It was odd to see him so late in the game.
Right.
You know,
right.
Very.
This is an entertaining game. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching it when we get home. I mean, the Suns are playing pretty well right now. 42-41, they're up. 5 minutes left in the second quarter. Oubre got the start. Tyler Johnson started a point guard. DeAnthony Melton's coming off the bench, although he is back now. But no TJ Warren, he's still out.
Oubre's playing well. He's got 12 points so far in the start. DeAndre Ayton's off to a good start. 9 points, 4 rebounds so far in the game. Devin Booker, 5 points so far in the game. And the Suns are 42-41 right now with the lead. About 5 minutes to go in the second quarter of this one. We'll see how they end up. We'll be talking about this game, of course, tomorrow and find out, frankly, whether this losing streak is over for the Suns. James Jones was on with us earlier, the GM, for his weekly visit. And he said, look, I don't want to have the worst record in Suns history. I don't want to have the longest losing streak in Suns history.
Of course, you never want to be the worst at anything. And we don't set a low bar. You know, so we're going into this saying that, you know, if wherever, whatever our record is at the end of the day, we're not shooting to have the worst record in franchise history. We're not looking to have the longest losing streak in franchise history. You know, we're looking to compete and win games and improve. And if we can improve going into the last 20, going in these last 24 games, if we can improve 23 games, if we can improve, you know, that's progress for us. But we're not looking at setting records for losses.
15 straight.
You're happy to hear that.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear
You're
that.
You're happy to hear.
Because that's so, I mean, first of all, he has to say that. All right. He can't say, yeah, I don't really care. I mean, that's not good for James's job security if he comes out and says, I don't care if we have the worst team in franchise history or the longest losing streak in franchise history. But I tell you what, it matters to me as a forever Suns fan, literally since the day I was born as a forever Suns fan. It simply does not add up to me. I've watched a lot of Suns basketball. Okay. And in terms of the roster, this is not the worst roster I've ever seen this team field. It's just not.
No.
You've got a max player. You've got a number one pick. You've got
a lot of lottery picks.
10th overall pick. You've got a 4th overall pick. You've got what should be a lot of talent. Now, are they young? Have they gelled? Yeah, they're young. No, they haven't gelled. But to say that this is the worst team the Suns have ever put together, I just don't buy it.
Because of that.
Yep. Because of that. Because this can't be the worst team the Phoenix Suns have ever put together. It can't be. You can't tell me that a max player and a number one pick who's as physically dominating as DeAndre Ayton would account for a 16-66 season, which is the franchise worst, set in their inaugural season back in the late 60s. I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
I know you're saying it can't be. But the reality is it could be.
It could be. And if it is, if they get to the end of the season and it's the worst record in franchise history, God help anybody.
Well, here's
Igor, James. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do to this organization if they end up with the worst record of all time.
Here's your indicator right here. This game right now. Cavs. You're not going to get many opportunities to beat, you know, to win basketball games. This is a game that you have a chance to win because they're terrible too.
If they don't win one of these three games on this road trip, here, Miami, or Atlanta, if they don't win one of these three, they will finish with the worst record in franchise history because I don't think there'll be 6 wins left in the 20 that they have remaining on the season. They have to win at least one of these games. They have to. And if they don't, they're going to set the record. And I'll still be baffled as to why. Spencer Keatsman is next.
They're going to win tonight.
We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everybody.